Turn your tax refund into a new landscape with Menards. Make this the year you check that project off the list. Create stunning patios and build strong retaining walls with our huge in-stock selection of beautiful concrete blocks ready to take home today. Plus, easily build and design your own raised garden beds with our garden block. On sale now. Check out our weekly flyer and start saving on landscape blocks now at Menards. Save big money at
Menards. Welcome, everyone, to The Simulation. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
That's Natalie Morris, although we just said that in our new open, so I got to get used to not saying that. Hey, we've got a very busy show for you on this Wednesday. We're going to look at the very latest with this ice apocalypse. National Weather Service has just updated their forecast for this, and it's not just about like a lot of snow. It's going to be a ton of ice. And the bigger story, though, is that all of the warning signs have been there for a long time to upgrade our grid, to fix our natural gas problems that hit, of course, across Texas during the last ice apocalypse that happened in 2021. And guess what? Those things haven't been fixed. So it's going to be way worse as this storm hits Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and lingers through the weekend. And our hearts and prayers are going to go out to people because it's going to be very, very bad. We're going to look at what precautions people can take. Colonel,
you know it's going to be bad because Ted Cruz left.
Did he already? California.
Yeah, oh, if Ted Cruz leaves, you know that's it. Well, we're going to have Colonel Maness on the show because he has been speaking about this for a long, long time, about America's energy infrastructure. So we're going to talk about that.
We're also going to talk about the new spending bill. It makes me want to punch things. It's really upsetting. The most upsetting part, Clayton, I'm going to just give you the lead, is that everything that they fought over during the last government shutdown were just capitulated in this one. Like, let's just do it. So what the hell was that all about? People who didn't get paid, who were furloughed. Now it's all in there permanently, at least through the end of the year. So it's a big middle finger to every American worker and taxpayer, and we're going to go over that. We're also going to talk about, hey, President Trump says there is now a foundation in place for Greenland. NATO gave it to us. NATO doesn't have authority to do it.
But not so fast.
That's cool.
But not so fast, because Denmark just a few minutes ago said, over our dead bodies. We're not budging at all on this.
Right.
You're not just going to take our country.
But why is NATO even involved? They don't own Greenland. So Mark Rutte showed up as if it were his. He's a pimp now? What the hell? And also, we're going to talk about this new fight over Christian Zionism, because this group of Christian leaders has issued a rare rebuke of Christian Zionism that really upset Mike Huckabee. He does politics through his religion. He says this is the only way to Christian. So we're going to talk to Father Robinson about that as well.
Yeah, we're going to get to all of that today. Thank you guys for subscribing to the show and being a part of our podcast here. We have a daily newsletter as well, so thank you for subscribing to that. It publishes first thing in the morning. If you just go to redacted.inc, put in your email address, you will receive that email, and it's a great way to start your morning. About five or six of the big stories of the day, you can read it in about 5 or 10 minutes. Again, redacted.inc is the place to go to sign up for that newsletter.
And hey, if you're watching us on Rumble, we really appreciate it. We want to tell you that Rumble is an ad-free, distraction-free platform, and it is a free speech platform. Rumble has never punished us for any content that they disagreed with. We can't say that about other platforms. You know who you are. And that's why we are so proud to be there. And if you become a Rumble Premium member, you can get exclusive access, not just to Redacted, but our other friendly shows such as Crowder's Mug Club, Tim Pool's Timcast, and a lineup of other voices that are not afraid to think differently. Glenn Greenwald comes to mind, Russell Brand, other, again, like-minded shows, Jimmy Dore. Rumble Premium is how you support platforms like ours that are built on genuinely free speech, not just talking about it, but saying things that are scary to say. It's a place where we can do that. So if you would please check out how to support them by going to rumble.com/premium/redacted. You'll get 10% off annually and or monthly for Rumble Premium, and you can join the movement. It's rumble.com/premium/redacted. Well, Congress has unveiled another bloated piece of shit that is a spending bill. And guess what? It was put forward by both parties. So that whole ruse where they pretend to fight over whether or not American workers can get paid. That's not going to happen this time because they all got their priorities. It's a big spending package that is a middle finger to every American taxpayer. Here's the bill. I linked to it in the newsletter this morning. It's over 1,000 pages, and it totals over $1.7 trillion in funding. Now, this is not just let's keep the lights on kind of funding. This is let's keep the lights on and more. And you know they always sneak in things that would never pass a single vote in these spending packages. This time was no different. And again, this was put forward by both parties, which means they're not going to fight about it. They both already agreed, and both sides are just writing a blank check. They're just spending like drunken sailors. Now, here's a real kick in the pants that I said makes me want to just punch things. Remember the whole healthcare eligibility bit that they fought over last year when we had the longest government shutdown in history, where Republicans are saying we need more eligibility checks to just pay people into Medicare. And Democrats are saying, absolutely not. We want everyone in Medicare. We just want it. And they fought over that for weeks and weeks. People didn't get paid. Well, they're not going to fight over that this time because those eligibility requirements have been expanded, and that's permanent. Now, take a look here. This is where the fight just disappeared, page 772 of the bill. It's called Healthcare Extenders.
That's all I got to. I got to about 720 and I fell asleep.
Oh, yeah, I guess I got farther than you. Well, these temporary pandemic expansions in health and welfare programs are now baked in as permanent. It's a permanent cost for taxpayers. So someone may not be sick, may be willing and able to work, well, not willing, able to work, an able-bodied person, but they'll still get Medicare because we're expanding all eligibility. We're just doing it. It's so that hard-fought battle from last time, that was all a charade, a ruse, theater. So fun, right? So middle finger to all of them over this. Now, here's another kick in the pants. Again, not just keep the lights on, but also they're buried several hundred pages deep is something Congress also considers non-negotiable, which is money for Israel. On page 101 of 1,059, you find provisions allocating hundreds of millions of dollars for Israeli missile defense programs, including the Iron Dome and other joint U.S.-Israel systems. Once again, Congress has structured things so that funding the U.S. government is linked to funding a foreign country's defense system. I don't think there's any other way to see it. They sold us down the road on this one after pretending play fighting last year. If you're not pissed, you're not awake. I don't know what to do with you, but come over to my house and I will get you pissed and we'll read this together. Joining us to discuss is Daniel McAdams from the Ron Paul Institute. Thank you for joining us. You look pissed. That was a scowl if I ever saw one, and rightly so.
Don't insult our guests out of the gate like that.
Well, it's appropriate. Do you want to give us a facial expression for how you feel about the spending bill? Okay. See?
Yeah, that's better.
Why don't you put that into words? I'll stop talking.
Well, the funny thing about the emergency COVID thing, you know, as Milton Friedman is reported to have said, there's nothing so permanent as a temporary government program, right? So there you have it. I mean, it almost makes you think that the whole November brouhaha, the longest shutdown in history, was just a tee up for what they want to do anyway, which is to put a bunch of crap in the next one and say, well, don't make us do this again. I mean, we're a country held hostage. I mean, you teed it up perfectly, Natalie, because we're facing a massive ice storm. Our infrastructure is total crap. You know, it's falling apart everywhere. Not that we want the federal government to be in control of it, but nevertheless, that extra $4 billion that we're sending to Israel on top of what we normally send them, that probably could have gone a long way to keep us from freezing ourselves to death, especially when, of course, we're sending it to a very wealthy country. So, yeah, that's what they do. They spend. They don't care. That's why there was a Gallup poll that came out this past week saying that the younger generation, for the largest percentage in history, despise both political parties. And right. I think we're seeing why that's true here. They hate both parties.
It's being, of course, run by the Uniparty. And that's what they want. They want us to be sort of bifurcated, set up in these little fiefdoms where we're fighting, you know, right against left, left against right. And really, we always sort of fight over the culture war stuff, the abortion stuff, that kind of, right? But the LGBTQ painting rainbow flags on crosswalks, things like that, right? But really, at the end of the day, they are in lockstep. The Uniparty is in lockstep on all of this stuff. The size of government never shrinks. That's the old joke, right? It never shrinks. And we are heading for a disaster. I mean, you and, of course, Dr. Paul have been covering what's happening to the U.S. dollar. This is not a joke.
Yeah, when you have the combination of proliferated spending and also an aggressive foreign policy, then you have countries running for shelter from the dollar, and we're seeing that right now. We're seeing even in Davos during these meetings this past couple of days, where Canada said, "We're out of here, dudes. We want to deal with China. At least they don't try to tell us what to do." I mean, that's what happens, you know. And it's funny, but it's not funny. But you know, there's nothing like a must-pass bill to get everyone to put all the junk they want into it, you know, all the pet projects. And, you know, the Israel spending is bad because it emboldens them to do things they shouldn't do, like attack their neighbors constantly, right? In fact, just as Netanyahu was being accepted on the board of peace, he was bombing the crap out of Lebanon again today, out of a village in Lebanon today. So there you go, there you have it. So not only does it embolden them to do things they shouldn't be doing, in discouraging them from making peace from their neighbors, would be good for their neighbors and for themselves, but it also is corporate welfare for very, very well-connected and wealthy Americans in the military-industrial complex. Everything you see here, I'm looking at the numbers, Natalie, on your great post on X. Every one of these billions and billions of dollars is being transferred from hardworking people in the United States to very wealthy, well-connected people in Washington, D.C. And that's a massive ripoff for all of us.
You know, when I opened the bill, the first thing I did, Control-F, I searched for Ukraine and Israel. I just want to go straight to it. What's going out, right? And this bill actually doesn't have money for Ukraine. And now, you know, Scott Bessent this week is saying Europe has got to finish paying for this. We're pretty much done. But there's still ways we're funneling money through contractors. It's just not in this spending bill.
Right. It's all hidden.
Right. And so, I mean, can we make any kind of victory lap that maybe we're done paying for, you know, Ukraine University?
No, I would not be surprised to find it somewhere. And there's a lot of stuff hidden in this. You know, in the state appropriations part, and I haven't read all 85 million pages of it, I'll be honest with you, but
me
I did
neither,
read a couple of things.
As long as we're confessing.
In the state, yes. But in the states, sorry, in the state appropriations part, they kept all the money for the National Endowment for Democracy. You know, this is all the work that we were told the DOGE was doing. They're cutting all this crap
I'm
out.
Die.
You know, and there was, you know, the Congressman Clifton from Arizona put in an amendment to cut the money, $315 million for NED. And it was defeated because 80-some Republicans crossed over and voted to keep it. And the thing that bothers me about the right and left is they frame this as if, oh, NED is this leftist, woke outfit. No, the NED, as we know, was a primary source of training and funding for these two NGOs that were behind the attempted overthrow of the Iranian government, the most violent. As the more comes out that the thugs that were going in there and just killing people willy-nilly, this is what NED does. It's not right or left. It's the regime. It's the deep state. It's the Uniparty. And that's what it's all about. And they kept the money. They can't even cut this kind of money.
It's unbelievable. I mean, it's like, I mean, if Epstein, I wouldn't be surprised if Epstein's receiving money in the bill somehow. They're just,
right.
they can't stop themselves. What happened to DOGE?
Like, is USAID back and USAID yeah. back and is PBS getting their funding again? I mean, what's, where did we go?
I think we should point out the National Endowment was instrumental in this Venezuela military operation. We know this. Now, at least. So we are still, Republicans are using it, even as they pretend, you're right, that it's a leftist organization.
Reagan, it was under Ronald Reagan. The neocons talked Ronald Reagan into creating the NED. They said we could do all the great things and promote democracy, and we won't even have to put in the CIA, you know. And Reagan, sadly, is one of his big mistakes, one of his really huge mistakes, is to allow the neocons to create NED. But once you create it, it's an overt CIA, and they can do all sorts of things. I mean, they've been trying to overthrow the Venezuelan government since Hugo Chavez's days. You don't have to like Chavez or Maduro to say this is really, why are we spending all this money doing it? It's really not an important thing for us.
And like what Philip just asked about USAID, we know that a lot of it's been funded, folded into the State Department, mm-hmm. right under Marco Rubio.
That's exactly important.
So that is now there. Like how much are they still receiving? And then also DOGE, like what is going on with DOGE?
I mean, AID may even be worse because now it's become Marco Rubio's little satchel that he can open up and send the money wherever he wants to, a little bit for Cuba, overthrowing Cuba. I suspect that there's a lot less oversight now that the thing called USAID is gone and it's now under sort of Marco. I mean, everything goes to Marco. Have you noticed that? Literally everything that comes up goes to Marco Rubio. He's got to run Venice. Venezuela. He's got to run this peace thing. He's got to run AID. I mean, the guy's a genius.
I saw a joke yesterday that Marco Rubio finds out that he's J.D. Vance's new nanny.
Well, the memes are funny. It's him sitting on the couch, like kind of defeated, and he's now they always dress him up. Now he's got to run Greenland, so he's in a full like parka with.
He's in Mary Poppins because he's going to be the nanny.
Yeah, everything is folded under there, and you're right about this. So now we don't have like the boogeyman of USAID. It's just a name change. It's just now folded into the State Department budget, and we'll never know about it anymore.
Yeah, that's a problem. I mean, I in the old days, I used to follow NED really closely and all the things that they used to be very good about reporting. But the thing is, people like investigators like me back in the day were able to find these things, and so they would find ways to hide the reporting and make it more difficult. It is more difficult to find, but there are great researchers out there. Michael Tracy's one of them. I think he's the one that blew the whistle on this whole, like the two main sources of information for what was happening on the ground in Iran were suspiciously located within 10 miles of the CIA headquarters in Fairfax, Virginia. So, you know, I mean, there you have it. The something, something in Iran was actually not in Iran. It's in Fairfax, Virginia. Right. So, you know, that's how it works.
Well, Daniel, we'll get you out of here on this because you just brought this up. I'm just curious on this Iran piece. Maybe you can speak to it. You know, we're hearing that what was uncovered with this whole operation was Mossad was basically hung out to dry. And this entire Mossad operation now in Iran has been basically exposed. It had been years long in the works, and now it's been totally exposed. Trump sort of, as Scott Ritter said, basically backstabbed Netanyahu and basically got rid of Mossad, all part of this operation and money that we're talking about.
I wish that were the case. I can't imagine Trump and backstabbing Netanyahu in any way, shape, or form. We certainly helped them take care of the Kurds, though. The Iranians took care of the Kurds that were crossing over from Iraq. They were the muscle for this whole operation with the Kurds coming in from Iraq, and they were slaughtered on the border. But, you know, this was in terms of the other muscle on the ground was a Mossad operation, and they were using the Starlink that was smuggled in. And I mean, to his discredit, I mean, I'm sort of a fan of Elon Musk, but I think it's a big mistake for him to get involved in these kinds of operations. And he was very much all in for this. My guess is he didn't fully understand what it was all about in the extreme violence that they were trying to use to overthrow the government of Iran. It was a mistake to get involved and do the bidding of CIA regime change operations. I think it kind of discredits himself for doing that. But it may well be the case now. They may have been able to clean out a lot of these Mossad undercover agents. I mean, Iran is a massively huge country, and it's got a lot of borders. I mean, we haven't been able to, at least till recently, one of Trump's triumphs is to help us guard our own borders, but it's very difficult when you've got enemies all around you.
Yeah. Well, the money continues to flow, Daniel, and they're doing a better job of trying to hide it from us. So, well, you know, and you're the Pentagon, you have, what, 7 straight audits that you fail, but you get a new $1.5 trillion budget as a reward.
But I think the lack of fight here tells us everything we need to know. They're not going to fight. It's not major in the press. It's not a big, we're talking about other things. Like, we just...
Well, it's the midterms.
We're not going to pay attention to it. Yeah, exactly.
Well, here's
right.
Speaker Johnson. This is Speaker Johnson. He's a deer in the headlights. He's the worst speaker I can remember. I mean, he's terrible.
Yeah, it's the bend over party. That's what it means.
The bend over uniparty.
The bend over uniparty, right. As opposed to what I floated recently is the fuck it party, which is only anti-war. You're invited to join my party.
I will join that one.
I have no leadership at all.
I need the bumper stickers for that
We're still workshopping the name. Might not play well in elementary schools, but we're working on it. Daniel McAdams, great to see you as always, my friend. Thanks for your great analysis as always.
Thank you.
I know I shouldn't swear. I apologize, but
you got the dirtiest mouth, and I'm from Philly.
I just,
you know,
can't believe it.
Yes, goddamn it, George.
I just
we're broadcast on live television too. We're broadcast.
I'm sorry.
So say to all of our Beck TV viewers.
I'm sorry. I apologize. I will wash my mouth. I got really upset about government spending. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Philip.
Well, I just, you know, like every time we talk about something like this and like, I can't remember if it was Natalie or if Daniel, somebody said, well, you know, the money will continue to flow. And the thing is, if we're at like $38 trillion in debt, where the hell is this flowing money coming from? I mean, it's just like, it just.
Well, I mean, as Neil Kashkari from the Federal Reserve has openly admitted that the Fed has an infinite supply of money. His words, they can print it. So they will just print as much as they want. Of course, the wall will be once other countries stop accepting the fact that the United States just keeps printing money, and then they start to unload all of these treasury bonds, and then we have to buy them back, and that's when we have an enormous problem on our hands. Europe threatened that today, by the way, over this Greenland issue. Said, hey, you're going to do this. What we're going to do is just dump $8 trillion worth of U.S. treasury bonds on the market.
Well, yeah, I saw Denmark's pension fund. They sold all their, they're selling off their U.S. treasuries. So it's already starting.
Well, and China in a big way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so one of the largest holders is Japan. And so Japan is, you know, we've been kind of bullying Japan to kind of hold on to these treasury bonds, but their economy is on the brink. So I don't, you know, we're watching some craziness unfolding right now. So, all right, we got a lot more news to get to.
That's right. We're going to talk more about this Greenland deal. I use the word deal in air quotes. You can see where we're going with that. But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at Quo. Because, hey, if you're a small business and you have a problem missing phone calls, then you want to look into Quo by going into quo.com/redacted. What it is a way for you to share a business phone number with several people. So here's an example. Yesterday, Clayton and I are looking for a new border for when we, a dog border, when we go on vacation. This has been a sore spot in our family. And I called a local border because I wanted to interview them. And no one answered. And it was, we're outside taking care of the dogs. And I thought, well, if they had Quo, they could forward this to several different people who could take this call. That's exactly what it is. It's about not missing opportunities. So whether you're in that level up mindset for your business, it's wild how much just this basic stuff matters. Still answering the phone matters. So they can help you connect and share a business number with your team, reply faster, stay on top of every customer conversation so you never miss an opportunity to connect with your customers, because now I have to call the dog border back, right? And try and find them. Maybe I'll find somebody else. This is a missed opportunity. So don't miss opportunities. See if Quo works for your business solution. Whether you're a small or medium-sized business, look into this. It's not just a phone system. It's a smart system. And again, they automatically log your calls, generate summaries, and highlight next steps so nothing gets lost, nothing falls through the cracks. So go to try Quo for free, plus get 20% off your first 6 months when you go to quo.com/redacted. Again, you can try it for free and then get 20% off your first 6 months. No missed calls, no missed customers. That's quo.com/redacted. It's kind of hard to say customers and Quo at the same time. It comes out as Quostomers. And that's not a thing.
Actually, maybe they should coin that.
Yeah.
Get their new Quostomers up and running.
Exactly right.
Quostomers. Sorry, I'm just saving something in our chat room here. Someone gave a good idea about a story, and I'm like, yes, I want to look into that. So, David, I'm sending it to you right now. All right. Well, let me check my spectacles. You must have been using them because they're, like, cloudy.
I was.
You were? Every time...
I'm busted.
I caught you. Every time my glasses are, like look like they've been schmutzed on, mm-hmm. it's because this one over here grabs them and borrows them.
I did that. But all right. I'm not lying about it.
I'm glad I didn't even ask. I just, glad you were honest about it.
I'm an honest person. Makes me slightly unpleasant.
Well, Trump used the Davos stage to put allies on notice once again. Back off of Greenland right now. It's ours. Or get hit with massive trade tariffs and tariff penalties. He calls it, and he, by the way, he called it a piece of ice. Watch.
So we want a piece of ice for world protection, and they won't give it. We've never asked for anything else, and we could have kept that piece of land, and we didn't. So they have a choice. You can say yes, and we will be very appreciative, or you can say no, and we will remember.
Okay. Well, Greenland is already remembering. They've taken to the streets today, and you know it's got to be important if you're getting people out of your house in Greenland to take to the streets.
Yeah.
And in protest, saying hands off our country, So I don't know how many people live in Greenland, but a lot of them were outside today in protest after the president's speech. And then a short time after that, we learned from reports that Trump has struck a deal on Greenland, and they have formed a framework of a future deal that he posted this on Truth Social, clarifying that based on a very productive meeting that I've had with Secretary General of NATO, Mark Rutte, we have formed the framework of a future deal with respect to Greenland and, in fact, the entire Arctic region. This solution, if consummated, will be a great one for the United States of America and all NATO nations. Based upon this understanding, I will not be imposing the tariffs that were scheduled to go in effect on February 1st. So that threat
that he just made. NATO doesn't own Greenland. It's not
really?
To give away.
Mark Rutte can't just like make a deal?
No. I mean, I can give you the Met Gala. I'll do that.
I don't want that.
But I have no interest in the Met Gala. So interesting.
Yeah.
It also sounds to me like in that True Social post, it also sounds like maybe we've taken control of Canada as well, because the Arctic region, I'm pretty sure they're a major player in the Arctic region. So that's good. That's
Mark Carney, in response to that today, Canadian Prime Minister, said, we will invoke Article 5. We are going to support NATO, and we will come to the protection of Denmark, the Kingdom of Denmark. So Canada is not backing down on this either, but it doesn't really matter. I mean, Denmark is also not backing down. They have said, we will not budge an inch on giving up sovereignty. This was after this framework that President Trump said was in place. So I love how Denmark's like not a part of the conversation in any of this.
It's only military. It's two people who have no interest are deciding what happens to this third place.
Well, another person go ahead, David.
Well, I just wanted to say there's about 57,000 people in Greenland. That's all.
Okay. Thank you for that. Also, President Putin came out and said, you know, he's kind of behind this idea. I'll just play a few seconds of this. Watch.
О планах Соединенных Штатов Америки по присоединению Гренландии. Но, знаете, это только на первый взгляд может кого-то удивить и глубоко ошибочно полагать, что это какие-то экстравагантные разговоры новой американской администрации. Ничего подобного. На самом деле, такие планы у Соединенных Штатов Америки проявились еще в 60-е годы 19 века.
So,
уже тогда...
I mean, that's even what Dr. Ogilvie-Ravasi was talking about yesterday, is that, you know, he's basically kind of saying...
He's fine with it.
Okay, all right.
She also made a great point. Have a referendum. Give them at least the semblance of deciding for themselves. It's a joke that it's not even being discussed.
Yeah. Well, let's bring in Ralph Schulhammer, academic researcher who follows Europe very close, joins us now from, I believe, is in Austria today. Ralph. Maybe you can help unpack this hornet's nest. I mean, we're really... Trump did not hold back in his speech about Europe. He was really coming after Europe in a big, big way. You haven't given us anything. We give you everything. We fully support NATO. This is what we want. You better come to the table. You're going to be spanked. Lots of tariffs. Your countries are going to be in ruins. Help us unpack. What was the response from the European side on this?
Well, I think you mentioned the stick part of his speech, but I think there was a lot of carrots as well. He mentioned his ancestry, right? He said that his mother was Scottish, that his father was German, that he wants a strong Europe, that he thinks there are mistakes being made in migration policy, in energy policy, right, Clayton? This is how we started our conversation, I think, now almost 3 years ago. I think there was a lot of good stuff in his speech. It was very Trumpian. I always find it a little bit mean to dish out on the Danes, because per capita, I know per capita is sometimes tricky, but per capita, more Danes died in Afghanistan than Americans, given the proportionality of the population. So this idea that, you know, what have the Danes ever done for us? Then he had this, in my opinion, funny line about, you know, if it wouldn't have been for the Americans, everybody here would be speaking German. Well, you know, in Davos and in Zurich, they speak German. This is like a French guy coming to the U.S. and saying, if we wouldn't have supported you in the Revolutionary War, all of you guys would be speaking English today.
Right. And then he says, or a little bit of Japanese, because the Japanese did a little bit of a Holocaust, too, which always gets on my nerves, because it's only the Jews that died in World War II, not more Chinese. Okay.
But overall, I think it was that if you try to separate the signal from the noise, I find it was very critical of the EU elites, if you will. But I think it was bullish on a Europe that finds its backbone and self-confidence. The only problem I see, and this is something we saw unfold over the last couple of weeks, is that the whole Greenland, let's call it debate, was a little bit of a damper on enthusiasm for Trump and the other way around among European right-wingers and the right-of-center parties, which is a little bit sad because if you look at polls in Denmark at the moment, the right-wing parties, who I think are ideologically very much in line with how we see the world and how the Trump administration sees the world, they are declining in the polls and the left wing is increasing because of this whole Greenland thing. So, I mean, right, there's an up and a downside to everything. But overall, I thought it was a good speech.
Ultimately, this is not about, I know people keep, it's about resources, but isn't it really about China and Russia and control of the Arctic?
Well, there is an issue these days, and redacted is, of course, an honorable exception to this rule. But there's very often this idea these days that whatever happens in the world has one cause, right? So thing X happens, and it is because of Y. But there can be multiple causes. I think that resources do play a role. I think that the Northwestern Passage and new sea lines that are opening up plays a role. I think the whole Golden Dome project, which Trump is serious about, plays a role, as you correctly mentioned, which, by the way, Danish intelligence reports themselves said in 2025 that increased Chinese and Russian activity in the Arctic plays a role. The geographical location of Greenland makes it interesting, for satellite launches, for data operation, for data centers. It's the same is, by the way, true for Venezuela because it's closer to the equator. So I think there are many, many reasons why there is a strategic interest in Greenland. And one point that Putin was making, I mean, say whatever you want about Vladimir Putin, but he knows his history. 40%, I don't know how many Americans know this, but 40% of the current U.S. territory was acquired via acquisition, right? It was, Florida was bought from the Spanish. You had the Louisiana Purchase in 1803. You had the pretty much at the point of a gun. You bought territory from Mexico in 1848. You bought the American Virgin Islands from Denmark in 1917. And the argument there was you either sell it to us or the Germans got to take it, so we have to take it first. So I think a lot of the stuff that Trump does that supposedly is outrageous is very much in line with 19th century American politics. And, those who follow my commentary, I'm generally a fan of 19th century politics. So, I have a soft spot for what Trump is doing. I would just
Democrat, well, I should say, Democrats built a whole memorial, a massive memorial to Thomas Jefferson, largest land purchase in American history, right? The Louisiana Purchase doubles the size of the United States. It's heralded by Democrats as a great accomplishment by Thomas Jefferson. This would bring massive amounts of land into the United States fold.
And of course, you had Alaska in 1867, and even then there was already a conversation about potentially getting Greenland. I know in 1917, the contract with Denmark said that the United States will respect the authority of Denmark over Greenland. But international politics and diplomacy is complicated. Truman wanted to buy it in 1946. So there is a little bit of a precedence for all of this. And as we can see now, it looks like a deal will happen. Some people say this is, again, taco Trump. I don't think that's fair. He's a negotiator. He goes out, bombastically with lots of threats. And ultimately, I think very often he doesn't get the whole 100%. But if he gets 80% of what he initially wanted, I think that's still a success. As I always say, I think Donald Trump is everything his critics say he is, and he's everything his supporters say he is. But I did like his speech in Davos. I think he was, his rhetoric, you know how he is. But if you separate the signal from the noise, lots of the things he said were true. What he said about the UK was true. What he said about migration was true. He explicitly said, I love that part. He said, in 2017, Germany produced more electricity than today. I mean, when did you ever hear an American president being aware of electricity production in Germany? I mean, this seems to be very well informed. It was not a speech. There were the occasional platitudes, but overall it was a well-informed speech. As I said, I liked it very much.
Now, let's talk about the platitudes from European commissioners who are taking to the platform and saying, F off Donald Trump. I just see that as like, it's like flies. They have no power. It's just, right, it will get them some social media juice and nothing else. What do you make of those speaking of platitudes.
Well, it is. I mean, I think it was Ursula von der Leyen who said, Europe chooses the world and the world chooses Europe. Well, how about if Europe chooses its own people for a change? I mean, this is why so much that's happening in Europe is happening for that reason. It's always the world. This is what bothers me. And I am a European. I live in Austria. But this bothers me so much. And we've discussed this many times. It's always about the world, right? It's look at the climate policy. We have to save the world. We have to be a shining beacon when it comes to migration, human rights. No, you don't have to be that. First of all, you have to be there for your own people on the European level and then the nation states on the national level. And I think this is what, again, with the American administration, I would do it slightly different. Is that I think my communication strategy would be different than that the Trump administration is pursuing. But policy-wise, I think there's this misunderstanding. America first never meant America alone. But I think Donald Trump and his administration say quite clearly, we want Europe as a partner, but currently you're too weak to be a partner. So either you get stronger so that we can be, you know, somewhat on a similar of similar weight, or you have to make your peace with the fact that the United States will retreat and you'll be on your own. And I think that's a fairly fair message.
Finally, you know, Natalie brought up, well, David said, you know, there's 57,000 people live in Greenland. Natalie mentioned a referendum, you know, I guess in some ways like Crimea or the Donbass, people voting and saying, I want to become part of the Russian Federation overwhelmingly. Do you think that's a smart move? Do you think there's any move from the Trump administration to hold a referendum asking the people of Greenland who do they want to become part of the United States?
Listen, I mean, I hold no grudge against the people of Greenland. And I think the video we saw, I assume that all 50,000 of them were now out in the streets. But right. we have to be so realistic. And it depends on how much weight the Trump administration and the president himself are giving to the whole Greenland issue. But there are many peoples in the world, and some of them much more numerous than 58,000, whose voices and desire for autonomy of their own state has been ignored. I mean, think about the Kurds. Think about the people in wannabe autonomous regions in Spain. I don't know how a referendum in Puerto Rico would end these days. So, I mean, this is unfortunately the world we live in. Not every group of people gets their own state or gets their own form of autonomy or is under the kind of government or ruled by the kind of government they wish to be governed by. I mean, again, I hold no grudge against the people of Greenland. But at the end of the day, whatever a referendum would say, I don't think it would have a significant impact on the large interests that are at stake. That being said, to be honest, if we look, as I just mentioned, the Kurds and other peoples in the world, if your options are living under, let's say, the rulership of Denmark or the United States, that's not such bad choices. I mean, again, there are people in this world, again, I can just say again, the Kurds and others, who have the options between worse and worst. And in the Greenland case, I think these are pretty good options to have.
I think for me, what I'm enjoying is the catch-22 of these European leaders who are screaming about international sovereignty and, you know, things like that.
Globalism.
Right. And they have spent the last 2 years helping Israel burn down Gaza and allow that. So they are in this sort of moral conundrum and just they're walking in circles. They don't know exactly what to do to maintain their moral authority. And it is, to use a German word, Schadenfreude for me. I am watching that.
I mean, if you allow me to say one thing, it's whether it's Gaza or Greenland, the territory I care about most is Copenhagen, it's Vienna, it's Paris, it's Berlin. And this is the kind of territory particular to mass migration that we are losing. And so I find it absurd when Europeans talking about, and the Canadians, by the way, the same way about, you know, defending every inch of Greenland. Well, how about defending every inch of Copenhagen? I mean, there have been people, I've forgotten this, in 2005, there was a group of Danish cartoonists who published 12 Mohammed cartoons. Some of them have died in the meantime, but most of them had to live under police protection their entire life in Copenhagen, because you have such a significant percentage of the population that's already Muslim that criticizing Islam, you know, it's a life and death issue there. The same in the Netherlands, the same in Germany. So the territory I care about is much closer to home. So what's going on in Gaza? Sure, you know, this was all horrible and tragic, but the future of Europe is not going to be decided in the Middle East. It's not going to be decided in Greenland. So I find it very odd that every territory, it's again what I said before, right? All that matters, it seems, for the EU elites is the world. But the closer they get to home, the less it matters to them.
Yeah.
So when Friedrich Merz talks about Greenland and, you know, the Germans will stand with, you know, Greenland, how about standing with your own people for a change?
Right. Bruges You know, like Bruges is a shell of its former self. I mean, you've got, you know, you've got crime everywhere. It's, you know, anyway,
yeah,
we could go on and on about this, but you're right. And final, I'll mention this. Trump was asked at a press conference afterwards, Emmanuel Macron had made that text message overture, hey, come to Paris, we'll have a meeting. And he said, I'm not going to go to Paris. Emmanuel's not going to be in power very much longer. So that's a little side note.
And he has a point. I like the sunglasses that Macron was wearing. I don't know, maybe his wife, husband or whatever hit him again. I mean, we saw the video where he was slapped once, he might have slapped twice. But his approval ratings are around 15%. I mean, most of the European leaders currently are dead men and dead women walking. And you know, if the Trump gives it, this is what the last point. This is the only thing I'm sad about the whole Greenland thing is that to some extent, right, that he re-entrenched those elites that were on the way out because he puts the European right wingers, whom I support, in a little bit of a pickle. But you know, hopefully this is going to blow over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Ralf Schulhammer, always great to see you, host of the Hammer Time podcast. Check it out. One of the smartest people in Europe. I wish there were more people like you in Europe. Ralf, great to see you, my
friend. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, as always. Thanks for coming on. I love Ralf. All right. We're going to talk about this ice-ageddon, ice apocalypse, this massive storm. And people like our next guest have been singing from the rooftops about this to get our grid fixed in the United States. And it's woefully underprepared for this, and maybe even worse than what happened in Texas in 2021 when we had that whole collapse. So we're going to talk about that in moments. But first, when is the last time you woke up actually feeling rested? That's right. Well, when's the last time you looked in the mirror and recognized the guy staring back at you? If you're dragging through your days with no energy, zero motivation, well, guess what? Then you're not alone. It's not just a getting older thing. Blokes was built for men who are tired of feeling like a shadow of who they used to be. And they want to get rid of that dad bod, the brain fog, the fact that you'd rather sleep than spend time with your wife. That would never happen to me. These aren't character flaws. They're symptoms, and they're usually tied directly to your hormones. Every bloke's lab includes a 30 to 60 minute consultation with a licensed clinician who connects what you're feeling to what's actually happening in your body and helps you build a real plan to fix it. We're talking about TRT, peptide therapy, NAD+, all sorts of different treatments that get to the root cause and help you feel like yourself again, stronger, sharper, actually present. And when you start TRT, with blokes, you can actually add ED or hair loss prescriptions for just $1 a month, all of it. It's time to start settling. So go to joyandblokes.com/redactednews and use the code redactednews to get 50% off your lab so you can figure out what's actually going on inside of your body. 20% off all supplements. That's J-O-I. Okay, that's how it's spelled. J-O-I, joyandblokes.com/redactednews for 50% off your labs, 20% off all of your supplements. Start to feel like yourself again and get your edge back. Our thanks to Joy and Blokes for supporting our show. All right, thanks to everyone for subscribing to the show. We really appreciate it. To the tens of thousands of you that are watching around the world on Rumble, on YouTube, on X, great to see everybody. We really, really appreciate it. All right. Well, will we see a major grid collapse across a huge portion of the United States? All signs seem to be pointing to yes. A destructive, potentially catastrophic ice storm is forecast to impact the South this weekend. Widespread ice will cripple travel, cause major power outages and downed trees, power lines, everything. This is a rare high-impact event, as it's being called. Potentially the worst in decades since what we saw in Texas back in 2021. Just take a look at the map here and you get a sense of what we're seeing, where that orange is likely power outages. Highly likely at this point with all of that ice that's going to descend upon that region. The National Weather Service says great swaths of heavy snow, sleet, treacherous freezing rain could begin on Friday across parts of the nation's midsection. Here is their latest message. They've now upgraded their forecast. Confidence is high that a significant storm will occur, but not on specific details of the storm track, timing, and precipitation amounts. But one thing is clear, according to Matt Randolph, that this is going to be devastating from an ice perspective. Watch Matt Randolph.
I've been waiting to talk about the storm that's coming this weekend because I didn't want to freak people out. And a lot of these forecasts never pan out, but this one is panning out, it looks like. Yeah, everyone's in agreement now that the crazy forecast is actually happening. This is going to be one of those storms you probably remember for much of your life. Basically, the whole, more than the eastern half of the United States is going to be below freezing, most of that below zero. They're calling for, you know, foot and a half of snow all through here, all the way to the mid-Atlantic, and 3 inches of ice in this pink band right here. 3 inches of ice is unbelievably catastrophic. That is worse than what Texas experienced in 2021. There's going to be loss of life. Anywhere there's 3 inches of ice, there's no power. There's not going to be a power line that's not on the ground when there's 3 inches of ice. And emergency services aren't going to be able to reach you because there's 3 inches of ice.
And then lingering. So what'll happen is this is going to linger then for days. So these emergency service crews will not be able to get there. But the real heart of it is the grid. Colonel Rob Manis has been kind of preaching from the rooftops about this for years, really as an energy expert. And we wanted to bring the Colonel on to talk about this. Colonel, maybe you can give our audience a little backstory about how you've been like warning about this for years from an energy perspective. And then I want to talk about how prepared we actually are.
Thanks for having me on, Clayton. Look, I've been warning about this, especially in regards to Texas, since I was a wing commander at Kirtland Air Force Base in Albuquerque, New Mexico. In the winter of 2011, we had a devastating storm like what you're about to see here. And Texas was not able to generate enough natural gas for heat in its state. So they cut the pipeline off to states like New Mexico, which had a direct impact not only on the national security efforts that I was working on, but the 23,000 people that lived and worked on Kirtland Air Force Base, every major city in New Mexico. And I haven't seen anything that attempts to rectify that situation. So we have a natural gas capacity and delivery challenge that still exists in some form. I'm not sure exactly how bad it is now. I'm sure we've been working on it, but it still exists from the reporting that I've seen and who I've been listening to. And then there's electrical power generation. You know, folks, we have spent the last decade or more slowly destroying two things about our electrical power grid. It's called reliability and capacity, the ability to deliver the power to your home or whatever facility you're looking at. So you have to have a reliable capability to generate power. And by adding things like wind in too large of numbers, adding solar before it's technically capable of reaching a reliable state to help power the grid needs that we have today, and then decreasing reliability on nuclear power plants, and also increasing our reliance on natural gas power generation, which hurts the natural gas delivery that's going to homes to run heaters in the same situation. So we have all of these situations that we have slowly destroyed this reliability and capacity issue with, and then layer that on the fact that every control over the grid system nationwide is digital. And there's a cybersecurity vulnerability to that. All you have to do is look back a few weeks at the attack on Venezuela and the president of the United States informing everybody, well, we shut all the power off. And these weapon systems and the communication systems the government relied on can't operate without that power. So there's a vulnerability in what's called the SCADA system, which is the digital controls for all of the electrical grids, no matter who what utility company or what government is operating it. All of those things exist. And that's what I'm concerned about. You know, when we look at a state the size of Texas, we don't have enough battery storage capability yet for the solar parts of the power system in order to be able to make up for that. I think it's only about 14 gigawatts. And in a severely cold situation like this over a number of days, and it will take at least 3 days, probably closer to 4 to 7 days for the ice parts of this forecast to clear out. I went through an ice storm when I was a young man in West Tennessee with my grandparents that had 3 inches of ice, and it took over a month for them to get electrical power out. Thankfully, they had natural gas for their heating system when we didn't freeze to death. But not everybody's in that situation. So I'm very concerned that Texas's grid will first become overwhelmed and they won't be able to do those things that are necessary to do to get heat to folks. And I think the cause for concern about potential deaths and fatalities is real. I've been watching this system for the last few days myself. It certainly looks like the forecast is going to be true. I had a speech in Austin, Texas, scheduled to give Saturday morning, and the folks there canceled it because of the weather forecast and the weather concerns that they see developing already. So it's a tough situation. I don't think we're there yet. We're probably better than we were in 2011 and in 2021 when the last issue occurred, but we're still going to have some challenges and problems.
So you were a senior executive at Entergy, which is a power company for all of Louisiana, much of eastern Texas. And one of the big problems, of course, as you pointed out, was the solar, the wind in 2021. They went through and audited everything in Texas. They got ahead of schedule and went through and audited a lot of these systems and made sure that like a lot of these things were up to snuff. But one of the glaring problems still, as you point out, is the natural gas issue. So I know we're talking a lot about Texas here, but really it's going to go all the way through, right? You know, all the way through the South. When we talk about natural gas, like we always talk about electricity grid, but how impactful is this going to be on the natural gas structure as well?
Well, we've increased the number of power plants that use natural gas to actually generate the electricity because states have wanted to get away from coal due to climate change pressures and those kinds of policies. Wow. So they've gone to using natural gas. But so you still have natural gas that's delivered to the consumer to do things like run their heaters, do their stoves, hot water heaters, and those kind of things. But a lot of that is siphoned off to get to these power generation stations that are using vast amounts of natural gas. And the challenge, especially in cold weather, is pressure. What happened to us in Albuquerque was that the pressure dropped so much that Texas couldn't maintain the pressure to push the natural gas over a mountain range to get over into the valley of New Mexico. So they had to shut the system down to have enough pressure to get natural gas to their customers over in the state of Texas. That's an example of what happens. But now here we are in 2026, and we've created more natural gas electrical power generation stations as we've gotten away from things like coal, and that natural gas is also required to have large amounts of pressure, and all of these systems are linked together. The gas systems are in one way or another, and as that pressure decreases, the ability to deliver gas to run the electrical power generation or even the gas heater in your home, if you have a natural gas heater, is going to diminish over time. And the colder it gets, the more rapidly it gets colder, the worse that problem is.
I mean, at the heart of all of this, Colonel, is that we're going to see massive power outages. And the question is, how long will these power outages last? Well into the following week, right? So it's not, maybe you and I could be like, hey, let's just get in the car and go and get out of this storm path and, you know, take the dog. And a lot of people just can't up and leave. So what are what are people supposed to do? I mean, how can they prep for this, if at all?
Make sure that you have space heaters that don't require electricity. If you can get space heaters that run off of kerosene, that's better. But also make sure you look at the safety concerns with space heaters running off of kerosene. We lived that way when I was a kid in North Africa, using nothing but kerosene space heaters. But we had to be very careful about not killing ourselves with the gases that come off of them inside rooms and buildings and those kind of things. You could leave the area if it's possible for you to do that. But the main thing is make sure you can get heat and access to water and don't rely on the electrical system in order to do that. Now, if you have a propane tank in your yard and your heater runs off propane, you're set. If you have fuel oil and you have a fuel oil tank, then you're set. You'll be able to get the heaters lit off and those kind of things going. But with a pure electrical system or a natural gas system delivered from a central pipeline, it's going to be very difficult. And don't rely on that in this case.
You mentioned
the other thing about how long it's going to last, Clayton. I haven't mentioned this because it's the low tech side. And that is we have made a really good effort in the utilities to put residential electricity underground, the electricity that goes from the distribution station to the homes and everything. But not everything is underground. If you go to Louisiana and up here in northern Mississippi, all over Mississippi, really, in the south, we still use wooden utility poles with wires going across them. And all of those collect what? They collect ice. That's what breaks the wires and causes the system to go down. And there are thousands upon thousands of these that have to be repaired. And that extends the time that it takes to get out there and get electricity restored.
That's a great point. I was speaking to a friend who runs a solar company, and he said, most people don't understand. Yeah, that's great that you've got lines under underground in your neighborhood, but it's the substations that can that can also be hit and hit hard. And then, yes, you still have a lot of that infrastructure. I'll get you out of here on this, Colonel. You mentioned water, and I've seen this in some of the reporting now, too, from the National Weather Service and others, water supplies. So I guess going out and getting as much water as you can for your family, because what? How can this affect the actual water distribution centers?
Well, the water pipe's freezing up, not just in your house and the faucets freezing up in your house, but the system bringing the water to your house. Most of us are on water systems these days from local municipalities, or even the water pipes from your well to your home. Those valves and the pipes are likely to freeze up. So, you know, they're right to think about that. People should be collecting water and storing as much water. I would get enough to last 7 days if you got that type of storage capability before the temperatures start dropping below freezing. Because if it gets down to where it's below freezing for 2 or 3 days, and then 3 or 4 days after that, you're probably not going to get power for at least 7 days.
Jeez, yeah. This is shaping up to be a disaster. Hope people heed these warnings. Colonel, thank you so much for your expertise on this. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Clay.
Thanks, Colonel. All right, stay safe to all those people out there. It's going to be brutal. All right. Well, we got more news to get to. Oh, sorry.
Yes, we do. In fact, we're going to talk about this new rift inside Christian denominations over Christian Zionism. Mike Huckabee seems to be freaking out because a group of Christian leaders have issued a rare rebuke of Christian Zionism, saying that this is politicization of the Christian faith. And Mike Huckabee says, but that's what I do. That's how I roll. That's all I do.
That's my main job.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about that with Father Robinson in just a minute. Before we do that, we want to tell you about our friends at Brightcore Nutrition, because you know that toxins and microplastics are everywhere. Scientists estimate that we now consume a credit card's worth of plastic every week through our food, water, even the air we breathe. Pillowcases even have plastic. They've been found in human babies, human fetuses. No one is safe from exposure. And so there is a way to help make sure that your body is fighting against it. Even if you think, no, I don't eat, you know, plastic food or plastic packaged food, you're still being exposed. You really can't opt out. So that's why you should make sure that your gut can help you fight back with kimchi. And in fact, Kimchi One by Brightcore Nutrition is packed with over 900 probiotic strains unique to kimchi and proven to break down BPA, helping you detox from the inside out. It doesn't just support digestion, it helps protect your cells, your brain, and your hormones, and your future. Your body was never designed to handle plastics, but your gut was designed to protect you from plastics and other toxins as well. You just have to give it the right tools. So right now you can get 25% off with our code redacted at the link below. You might see it on your screen, or I'll read it to you. It's mybrightcore.com/redacted, or you can call them at 888-404-6312. Again, it's Kimchi One from Brightcore, because health starts in the gut. Use the code redacted, get 25% off plus free shipping.
And are you worried about those upcoming credit card bills after the holidays? If you're a homeowner, there's no better time than now to call American Financing. Wipe out all of that debt, eliminate the stress, and set yourself up for a strong, very strong 2026. The Fed dropped rates for the fourth time in December, and American Financing can help you access that equity in your home at an interest rate in the low fives. You heard that right, in the low fives. That is much lower than the average 20% or more in credit card rates. American Financing is saving their customers an average of $800 a month. That's like a $10,000 raise to start the new year. There are no upfront fees, no obligations to see how much you can save. And they're closing some in as fast as 10 days, even delaying two mortgage payments. American Financing, America's home for future home loans. Call today, 866-890-8434 today. Get 866-890-8434 today or go to AmericanFinancing.net/redacted. And here is their NMLS number as part of their disclaimer. It's 182334, which you can check out at NMLSConsumerAccess.org. And those APR rates that are in the fives start at 6.196% for well-qualified borrowers. So call them today to learn more. 866-890-8434 today.
Well, Senior Christian leaders in Jerusalem just issued a rare rebuke of Christian Zionism, which we all know has been used to sell war and support of a foreign government, mostly to American Christians. Here is the statement. It comes from the patriarchs and heads of Jerusalem historic churches, and it criticizes Christian Zionism and warns against political interference into the life of the church. Now, it's rare to see such a clear pushback from the heart of Christianity's oldest communities, and it raises major questions about faith and power and politics. Father Robinson joins us today to discuss what's at stake and why the church was compelled to speak out. So thank you for joining me. What do you make of this statement first? And then I want to talk about how Mike Huckabee is freaking out about it, because I think that's interesting too.
Yes, absolutely. I think the statement is clear, concise, sound, very good. And it, of course, is released from the patriarchs and heads of the churches in Jerusalem, which tends to cover 13 of the oldest churches, most of whom are Catholic, Orthodox, Anglican, and Evangelical Lutheran. This is a council that have been working together for a long time. It's also the week of Christian Unity, Prayer for Christian Unity. So it's a good time to release such a statement that essentially just says, look, first and foremost, Christianity is the truth, the only religion, and the New Testament is the fulfillment of the Old Testament. All of these things we knew already. But it also says there have been people standing up and speaking up on behalf of Christianity with a false teaching that don't have any authority to do so. And I think that's important because it's highlighting these people who are politicizing an error in the faith, as you and I would call dispensationalism, for politics, and essentially manipulating Christians into supporting a foreign state, which is, it has a lot of influence over here in America. And so for the patriarchs to speak out so clearly against this error is helpful. I haven't seen it come out from the individual patriarchs, so I'd like to see the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem and the Orthodox Patriarch of Jerusalem come out and release this themselves too. But it's good to see it coming out from the united body.
But it is, it says, such as Christian Zionism, that there are certain perversions of doctrine, such as Christian Zionism. So it leaves room for other political manipulations of the Bible. And I think that that's good because you can apply this statement across political lines. And we see that happening, especially in America, when so many of these evangelical churches are being sold to Israel. And their data, as we've covered, how, you know, you go to church, you get your data sold to Israel, and then you now are in this propaganda line. So it's a real problem, but they don't address it in such a maniacal, I feel maniacal about it. I feel very concerned about watching this happen, but it seems they take a measured tone so that this can be applied in the future. What do you think of my assessment?
Yeah, absolutely. But they use the words dangerous ideology, which it is. And you're right that it points to Christian Zionism explicitly, which needs to happen because we need to be told as Christians that this is not something we can fall into the trap of. But also it leaves it open so that this statement can be pointed to in the future with other harmful ideologies when people try to twist our faith for their own political aspirations. Mike Huckabee, who I know you'll get to in a moment, is a prime example, but he's one among many of politicians in the West who have fallen in love with an idol or created an idol out of the modern state of Israel, but are using people's Christian faith in order to gain support. And you're absolutely right in that data is being sold, but the faith is being manipulated in a demonic way, really, truly. We know that, for example, one of the biggest Christian witnesses that we've had in modern times was Charlie Kirk's memorial, right? There was a great big Christian service with politicians and pastors and faith leaders all speaking from the pulpit, trying their best to proclaim the gospel. We know that the data from that, anyone who attended that was receiving propaganda from Israel. Like, this is something that shouldn't be happening. Our faith shouldn't be used as a political tool for a modern state anywhere in the world.
Now, it doesn't specifically mention violence. It only mentions political co-opting But we know that that then is the consequence of supporting a nation state that is at war and has taken no precautions to pull back that war. And so, I mean, what do you make of it? I guess I wished that there was some kind of like, hey, the Bible says we're not supposed to be killing children, innocent children or something. But maybe that's implicit. What do you think?
Yeah, I think this is the first step because so many people's eyes need opening and you can't open them all at once and you can't jump in the deep end all at once. So you and I have had conversations before where we've said very clear things like, you know, as you just pointed out, killing innocent children in Gaza is wrong. We should pray for all innocent lives. But just that statement alone is too much for too many people at the beginning. So we've got to start off by saying the Christian faith cannot be manipulated with any harmful ideology, including Christian Zionism. So the words there, people are thinking, well, Christian Zionism isn't part of our Christian faith. Why not? And then they can dig a bit further. But you and I obviously know that the true faith, the Christian faith, grew out of Judaism of the Bible, but Judaism of today is not the same as Judaism of the Bible. It is a reaction to Christianity. It's a rejection of Christ, and no one that rejects Christ is good. In fact, we have a word for that. It's called Antichrist. And so we can't have Christians, Christ followers, supporting Antichrist. It makes no logical sense. And so when we hear that to be blessed as a nation or to be blessed as a people, we must bless Israel, we need to get back to the teaching and realize that actually, well, yes, Israel is now the church. Israel is God's chosen people, and it started out with biblical Judaism, and the Gentiles were grafted in. Nobody was replaced. Gentiles were grafted in, and Jews and Gentiles of that time are now referred to as Christians, followers of Christ, God's chosen people.
Yeah, I want to talk about Mike Huckabee. I guess let's do this, because then I want to talk about how that sort of came to be. And since you're an English Christian, I think that you might have a good perspective. I've been reading the Schofield book about how he was, Cyrus Schofield, who wrote the book, you know, sort of the Bible teaching book that introduced dispensationalism to Americans, was influenced by John Nelson Darby, who was an Englishman. And I want to ask you, let's get to that first. Why do you think he did that? Why do you think he came up with this idea that God has these like disparate set of rules for who lived in what century? And then that means that we must then support the nation state of Israel.
I think because of a lack of authority, and I think because of too much pride. If we look at any modern error or heresy, they usually come about from someone who believes they're more special than everyone else. Martin Luther, John Calvin. If we look at the Muhammad himself, right? So the Islamic faith comes from the same kind of private revelation that there's more to the truth than you've been given so far in the Bible. We have an extra, you know, Joseph Smith with the Mormons, another one, all these people. And so Jonathan Darby is another one who's like, no, I have a better understanding than the church has had for the last 1,000 years or 2,000 years. I have a better understanding of the truth of revelation. And so it comes about from an element of pride, but also a lack of authority in that lack of submission to the church's teaching. The church has taught for 2,000 years that Christians are God's chosen people. The church has taught that we should love our enemies. And so it's not about becoming anti-Semitic, but it is about recognizing that some people are anti-Christ and we need to bring them to Christ. We don't need to leave people where they are, because loving your neighbor means leading everyone to Christ, means trying to get everyone into heaven, make heaven crowded, as Charlie would say. That's our goal as Christians. And so when Jonathan Darby's poor theology got taken up by Schofield and spread, somehow making it from England over to America, where it's not even that prevalent in England anymore, but it is massive over here. We've got people who've only been taught that. And so all they know is that to bless Israel means to bless the 1948 state of Israel, which the Rothschilds and my government set up just not more 75 years ago.
Right. And I wonder, people who might still adhere to the Schofield Bible, haven't they been warned about false prophets? If you study the life of Cyrus Schofield, he abandoned his daughters. He married his second wife before he was divorced from his first. He was sued many times for fraud and theft. He stole money from people. He fought for the Confederacy and lied about it in order to work for the Attorney General's office. Why is this not obvious to everybody?
We fall for these traps all the time. Just, was it yesterday? no, 2 days ago now, was Martin Luther King Day, a federal holiday in this country, for goodness sake. I'm like, what? So this is the first time I've been in this country during this holiday. I'm like, oh. You have a federal holiday for a serial adulterer, sodomite, who denied the virgin birth, denied the resurrection of Jesus Christ, called himself a Christian. Like, it's the exact same problem as Schofield. These people that kind of make heroes of themselves, make saints of themselves, and people seem to follow them despite them the fact that they are not following Christ. And we fall for it time and time again, which is why we should never make idols, which is why the only person we should ever follow is Jesus Christ.
Right. Well said. Okay, let's talk about Mike Huckabee, because here's his statement. It's long and convoluted. It's barely worth reading, but he's basically saying, you can't gatekeep Christianity, but this is how I'm gatekeeping Christianity. That's the way I read it. He says, I don't understand how you can be a Christian and not a Zionist. Is this consistent, would you say, with, here's what concerns me the most, because I know what you'll say about whether it's consistent or not with theology, but he is a politician using his religion for his political aims. How does the church distinguish between faith guiding moral life and faith as a political instrument?
Right. So our politics should be governed by our faith, not the other way around. And so we should look at the Bible for exegesis, as in we should take out of the Bible teachings. But quite often people look at it through eisegesis, where they put their own understanding into the Bible and try to make the Bible fit what they already believe. People like Mike Huckabee are a prime example of that, because his faith clearly follows his politics. And we see that because we have 13 faith leaders of all the biggest churches throughout the history of the church together releasing a statement. And he comes out and says, no, I know better. So not only is he trying to undermine the church, he's trying to rebuke the church as a politician, not a theologian, right, not a faith leader, not even a particularly good Christian, but as a politician, he's saying, no, I believe this, so you are all clearly wrong. I mean, the audacity of that, the degree of pride around that. I hope he has some introspection to say, maybe he'll look inside at himself a little bit and think, am I right on this? Is the church trying to teach me something that I haven't yet understood? Because that's what we should all be doing. And I include myself in this, all of us, whether we're priests, bishops, or laymen, whatever we are, we should be thinking, what is the church teaching me in this? And how can I take something from it? Not how can I put my own understanding onto it? Because that's how we fall into pride and error and heresy.
Mike Huckabee seems very slippery. He seems to be outside of the realm of consequences. I mean, meeting with Jonathan Pollard, the spy, recently inside Israel, I don't have any faith that he will take that introspective route that you've suggested. But okay, anyone can course correct, so I will be kind about it. Even though I don't.
Well, I think he's gone native, hasn't he? We've seen this. Meeting with an Israeli spy is one thing, but he promotes Israel over and above promoting America. I often forget he's America's ambassador to Israel. I often think that he's Israel's ambassador to America. And nobody should be thinking that. Nobody should have any doubts about his loyalties, but we clearly do. And this is the problem with these politicians, that if you are representing this country, you should believe in this country first and foremost. Then that's the United States of America. If you don't love America more than every other country, you should not be a representative. You shouldn't be an elected official for this country. It's actually tyranny. It's actually treasonous. And it would have been treated as treasonous in any other previous generation. But we live in a soft generation where people can seemingly do whatever the heck they want, as long as they put Israel first. And, you know, there have been concerns about many of the mainstream politicians on their dual loyalties to Israel.
Yes. So how can Christians be on guard against false prophets who manipulate their well-intentioned faith for political aim?
Good question. I would say pick up the Bible, but don't read the Bible by yourself. Read it in church. Go to church. Find out what the church teaches. And the older the church, the better. If you can go to a Catholic church or an Orthodox church, fantastic. Find a teaching that's been around for 2,000 years. Don't find a teaching that's only been around for the last 100 years. Because if it's only been around for the last 100 years, it's novel, it's innovative, it's new, and it's probably wrong. Go with the sacred tradition, the sacred teaching of the church. The church is infallible because it is founded by Jesus Christ himself. And therefore, he revealed the truth to us. Let's go with his truth, rather than Darby or Schofield or Huckabee or even President Trump.
All right. I love it. Thank you so much for breaking this down for us. I really appreciate it. It's always good to see you. And Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. God bless you.
Thank you. All right. Well, let me know what you think of all of that. That's going to do it for today. Tomorrow we will be back. Tomorrow's Thursday. Feels like a Wednesday because we didn't have a Monday. but that's where we are. Anyway, if you're upside down like me, let me know. Hey, we do have a newsletter. Be sure to check it out. If you go to redacted.inc, you'll find our newsletter there. And we write it as a companion to this show so that you have not only a summary of what we're going to talk about in the show, but also other tidbits. And I try really hard to make sure that anything that I link you to in a hyperlink is original source material. I really work hard on that. So if I want to talk about, let's say, Taylor Swift's text messages, I want to really find the court document. I try really hard to do that. I think that most mainstream media does not. They only link you to their own coverage of things, and then it's just this big round, incestuous self-promotion, and we really try hard not to do that. So please subscribe to our newsletter. It's free. There's nothing behind a paywall, no cross-sell or upsell, totally free. While you're at it, if you love Redacted, you can also find more to support Redacted at the Redacted store. If you go to redactedstore.com, you'll find t-shirts and mugs and other things that we think are fun that you might want to signal to the world. How you feel about things. So check it out. We have, again, stickers and hoodies and t-shirts and things like that. Be smarter than your algorithm. That's one of my favorites. Even some of the teenagers at my kids' school have been wearing it. That makes me very proud because we thought of that together. So check it out, redactedstore.com. All right, y'all. I will see you. I just said y'all because it felt good. But anyway, I'm not a Southerner. Felt kind of like I was using language that's not my own. So I totally admit to imposter syndrome there. We will see you guys tomorrow, same time, same place, 4 p.m. Eastern. Thank you so much for being here with us today.